Good morning, Dr. Barry, and good morning, Willie. We'll be excited to hear about a report from the All-County Picnic, but first let's hear from Dr. Barry.
Good morning. I hate to delay the report of the All-County Picnic, so I'll try to be efficient. So generally some good news on the COVID front. Nationally, cases are down 19% in the last 2 weeks. Hospitalizations are also downtrending at the national level, so down 6%. And deaths are finally turning down, so 7% in the last 2 weeks, with 460 Americans dying a day, which is, of course, still far too many, but is at least down from where we were last week. In Washington state, cases are actually trending down a little faster, 30% down in the last 2 weeks, and hospitalizations are down 20%. Deaths are showing a small decrease, similar to the national level. In Jefferson County, our cases are largely flat. The total number of cases diagnosed so far in this pandemic has been 5,521. That puts our case rate at 463 per 100,000, with a 13% positivity rate, which is slightly down from last week. That leaves us at a case ascertainment rate of still around 40%. Our sewer measurements for COVID-19 is also down by about 15% in the last week. And thankfully, two of those folks who were hospitalized last week have been discharged. So there's only one person in the hospital for COVID-19 at this point. We've had no new deaths in Jefferson County, so we've lost 30 of our citizens to COVID-19. In neighboring Clallam County, 15,283 cases of COVID-19 have been diagnosed. That puts Clallam County's case rate at 395 per 100,000 with a 12% positivity. However, Clallam gets less home tests reported than Jefferson County does, so the case ascertainment rate there is about 30%. We do have only one person hospitalized in Clallam County for a total of 431 hospitalizations. And unfortunately, we have two new deaths to report this week, up to a total of 121. One was a person in their 70s and they were unvaccinated. One was a person in their 80s who was vaccinated and had received one booster, but not the second. And they both had multiple underlying conditions. And I think, unfortunately, that is a critical reminder that COVID-19 can still be very dangerous. And especially if you're over 65, it's really important to move forward and get your second booster. At this point, numbers are still high, but improving, which is hopeful. The most important thing any of us can do to protect ourselves and others is to stay up to date in our vaccines, and then also to wear a high-quality mask when we're indoors around others. Of course, anytime we can move activities outside or improve indoor ventilation, that's going to reduce transmission of COVID-19 as well. I think the biggest news on the COVID-19 front is we have heard that the Omicron-specific boosters are actually going to come quite a bit earlier than we originally thought. We were originally anticipating mid-October for the launch of the Omicron-specific boosters, but likely we're going to see those as soon as mid-September. We will likely run into the challenge that we've seen before, where the demand outstrips supply initially, because this is a new type of booster for us. And so we will be prioritizing vaccination to those at highest risk, particularly those over 65. This is all assuming that everything gets approved. We're just planning ahead for that. We've not moved through that approval process yet, and we don't have the specific dates in mind. Planned out yet. It depends on approval, and it depends on how much vaccine is available up front and how much of it comes to us here in Jefferson County. But we're roughly planning on mid-September, and we'll be working with our DEM colleagues as well as our healthcare colleagues for how to plan to roll that out, because we anticipate demand for that will be high. Most likely, it will be recommended for everyone 18 and up. The Omicron-specific booster is a little bit different than the boosters that have come before in that it has the Omicron sublineages in it. And the hope is that that will provide us greater protection against symptomatic disease overall. Right now, most of the boosters are really providing protection against severe disease, and we haven't been able to maintain good protection against any COVID-19 infection. And the hope is that these Omicron-specific boosters will allow more of that. But more data, more information on that to come as we get closer. A little bit of an update on the MPV front as well. At this point in Washington state, we have diagnosed 334 cases of MPV. Nationally, we've diagnosed 14,115. We have no cases of MPV yet diagnosed in Jefferson County, but this weekend we did have our first case of MPV diagnosed in Clallam County. was diagnosed in a young man, interestingly, a heterosexual young man. We don't think he contracted it through sex. We actually think he picked it up at a party. And so it is a critical reminder that MPV can be spread by any prolonged skin-to-skin contact. Right now, we're seeing most spread through sexual activity, but you can also get it through any other prolonged skin-to-skin contact. And one of the other occasions where we see that happen is dance parties, which we think is more likely how this young gentleman caught the infection. We are grateful to him and his family for getting tested right away and for isolating well. We were able to complete his contact tracing over the weekend and vaccinate his close contacts. He's doing quite well and should recover and do just fine. We know that this virus is disproportionately affecting the gay community, but it can affect anyone. It's just spread through prolonged skin-to-skin contact. So if you have an atypical rash, any rash that's atypical for you, particularly a painful one, please do get tested right away, as this young man did, so we can get you the treatment you need and get in contact with the people you've been around to reduce any further spread of the infection. So I want to acknowledge this gentleman did a great job, as did his family, in protecting himself and his community. We do have the JYNNEOS vaccine available in Clallam County right now for anyone who is in a high-risk group, which at this point is still primarily men who have sex with men, gay or bisexual men, or transgender individuals who have sex with men, who have had multiple partners in the last 3 months, or have had an STI in the last year. We unfortunately don't have enough vaccine available to vaccinate the general community at this point. And because this is disproportionately affecting the gay community, we're still prioritizing our vaccines there. However, if you have known contact with someone who has had MPV, you qualify for a vaccine right now. So regardless of where you fall in a risk category, if you know that you've been in contact with someone who had MPV, if your friend calls you and says, hey, by the way, we played video games over the weekend and it turns out I had MPV, we can vaccinate you for that. So give us a call at the health department and we can transfer vaccine between Jefferson and Clallam County so we can get you vaccinated very quickly as needed if you know that you've been exposed. Similarly, if you have a strange rash that's atypical for you, be sure to get tested right away. We will find out about that at the health department. We can help you get treatment and vaccine to the people that you know. And so with that, I'm happy to take any questions from our commissioners.
Gator Greg, any questions?
No, today. Thank you.
No, not today.
Oh, we're
all right.
Quiet.
So,
yeah.
So I'll go ahead and move into the KP2Z questions. We didn't have a ton today, though many of them were somewhat detailed, the ones that we got in this week. So the first one was actually about the Omicron specific booster, and particularly this question about how it will work. So the reason why the Omicron boosters are going to be moving forward is to try to add that additional protection against symptomatic disease. And we are hopeful that that will last longer. One of the biggest reason why you see the protection against symptomatic disease fade from the prior vaccines is not actually anything related to the vaccines, but related to the virus itself. And so unfortunately, we've seen the virus mutate in major ways in the time since we've had vaccines. So all of the vaccines we're getting right now are actually targeted towards the original lineage of COVID-19 from way back in March 2020. And they haven't really been updated since then. And so this would be the first vaccine to come out that actually is focused on the lineages that are circulating now. And so we're hopeful that that will provide longer protection against symptomatic disease. That's why we would roll out a booster to everyone 18 and up. But of course, we will have to monitor that to see how long that lasts, and it will depend on how the vaccine mutates from here. Another question was also really kind of talking about boosters and particularly protection for people 65 and older. The questioner shared an article from a blog poster called Your Local Epidemiologist. She's great. She does a good job of kind of breaking down the COVID-19 information in a way that's more accessible to general folks. And particularly this paper that they shared was about the different kinds of immunity that you have in your body. So we talk a lot about antibodies. Antibodies are really good at protecting against symptomatic disease, but they're one of the first things the virus can figure out how to get around. What you do have also in your body is cellular mediated immunity. And that's what protects you against severe disease, hospitalization, and death. And that's what's still holding strong for folks who are vaccinated, even months, years after you originally got your vaccine. So this person posed, since people who are over 65 tend to have less neutralizing activity from the vaccine, it doesn't make sense to kind of go get some chronic low-level exposure to COVID-19, in particular by going into stores without a mask on. And I would say there is likely some protection from very low-level exposure to COVID-19, but the challenge is how do you figure out what is low enough amount of exposure and how you make sure it's not so much that you're going to get COVID-19, get sick, give it to someone else, and potentially get severely ill, especially if you're over 65. And that's just really hard to mediate in a store environment. And so I wouldn't recommend going in unmasked. One thing you could do is potentially switch to a surgical mask. So we have seen that the amount of virus that you were exposed to does vary depending on what kind of mask you're wearing. And so potentially if you're thinking about going unmasked, you could try transitioning to a surgical mask to kind of scale back your protection, but it depends a lot on what your underlying health conditions are like. So myself, if you see me around Jefferson County, actually I am often in a surgical mask. That's because I'm young, I'm healthy, I'm boosted, and that is adequate to protect me from giving COVID to anyone else, and it provides significant protection to me. It doesn't provide the amount of protection that an N95 does, but for most common interactions, going to the grocery store, things like that, a surgical mask is enough, and I find it very comfortable, and that's what I tend to use. However, if you see me in a clinical setting where I'm likely to get much larger scale exposure, you'll see me in a KN95 or higher, or if I was on a plane, you'd see me in a KN95 or higher. So I adjust my mask based on the setting that I'm in. So for most grocery stores, surgical mask's enough. Very prolonged exposure like a bus or a plane or a train, you want to scale up the coverage that you have. Or certainly if you're very high risk yourself, if you're getting cancer treatment, if you're 85 and have multiple underlying conditions, I would wear a higher quality mask. But while there's some potential theoretical benefits to chronic low dose exposure to COVID-19, it's just really hard to titrate in the community. And I wouldn't recommend going unmasked in community settings at this time. Couple other good questions that we got in. One was asking about, let's see, let me get through to all of these guys. Oh, one person was asking about MPV. So if the smallpox vaccine received as a child provides any protection against MPV, and it does. We are seeing good crossover between the smallpox vaccine and JYNNEOS, which is the MPV vaccine. However, we don't know how much each of us is maintaining. So it likely is providing you some protection, but if you are in an eligible group to get JYNNEOS, you should also get that on top of that. The last time we did widespread vaccination of the public for smallpox was 1972, but we start vaccinating at age one. So if you were born 1971 and earlier, you were likely vaccinated against smallpox, so you likely do have some protection against MPV. But if you qualify for JYNNEOS, get that too. And last question was from someone who noticed a change in the CDC website. And this has been a challenge, I should acknowledge, for those of us who maintain public health websites, because there's so much misinformation out there and there's so much distrust and concern. Anytime the websites get updated, it stresses people out. And particularly there's a subset of the public who gets nervous that something has been changed or something has been hidden, and that's what this questioner was talking about. Apparently there was an update to the website at the CDC that discusses mRNA vaccines, and this person was wondering whether or not that means that our information on mRNA vaccines has changed, and particularly around how long they stay in your body, and it has not. So what we know about the mRNA vaccines, so that's the Moderna or the Pfizer vaccine, they deliver mRNA to your body. Your body's own systems turn that into protein that looks like the spike protein from COVID-19. And then the mRNA itself is very unstable, so it gets cleaned out of your body within a matter of hours to a few days. What the update that happened for the website was they said, after that protein piece is made, your body breaks down the mRNA and removes it as waste. They didn't specify that it was a few days, because actually sometimes it's as short as a few hours. So in a goal to make it as clear as possible and make these communications a little bit more simple, that was just an update to the language, but there's been no change in the data around those vaccines. They don't stay in your body. They leave your body within a few days. The spike protein that your body makes actually gets cleared out of your body again within a few weeks. The only thing that remains is that your immune system is now primed to fight the virus. And so with that, I'm happy to take any other questions that were spurred by that. Otherwise, I can pass it to Willie. Yes, Commissioner.
Looks like Kate has one, sorry.
I did think of one. Just with the CDC guidance changing, I believe we talked about on Friday that public health is going to be updating the flow charts, which helps mm-hmm. folks who might have been exposed and, you know, figuring out exactly what to do. So I'm not sure if you have an update on whether that's ready to go today, but if not, just want the public to know that's coming really soon and that reflects the new guidance. So anything else you want to add to that would be helpful.
Yes, so the public health flow chart that you follow if you were either diagnosed with or exposed to COVID-19 will be updated this week. I don't know if it's going to be ready to go live today, but it should be very soon. The main change there is a change away from recommending quarantine for anyone. Because there's such widespread transmission of COVID-19 going on, quarantine doesn't really benefit the public the way that it used to, and it's a significant hardship for people. And so we want to scale back anything that we don't absolutely need and keep the things that we do. And so the main change there is that if you know you've been exposed to COVID-19, the only recommendation there is that you wear a mask when you're around others for at least 10 days, pay attention to your body, check to see if you're developing symptoms, and as soon as you develop symptoms, if you do, test for COVID-19. If you don't develop any symptoms at all, go ahead and test by day 5 to make sure that you're not developing COVID-19. And as we've discussed before, if you are sick, please stay home to every extent possible. And if you're sick for more than 24 hours and you test a negative the first day, test again, because sometimes it can take a while for your body to see that rise in viral load that would actually test positive on a test.
Any other questions?
All right.
Dr. Berry, any more questions? Anyone? I was just going
to... I'll pass to Lily.
I was just going to say, in transition to Willie, I'm drinking down to my 4-H mug here. I did want to give a shout out to Sarah Peterson, our new 4-H coordinator, for winning the Commissioner's Award at the County Fair. I mean, she stepped into being the new 4-H coordinator and had no experience, and now she's won the award for the best building at the fair. So anyway, I just wanted to say that while there were people with us. Congratulations, Sarah, if you're out there. Okay, Willie. Give us the update on the picnic. What happened? How much corn was distributed and zucchini here?
I'm going to delay the county picnic update just a few seconds further. I know everyone's chomping at the bit. Just to address, as Dr. Berry was talking about the Omicron-specific booster, I just wanted to note that we started working with public health last week. We have our eye on that situation. You know, we have our pharmacies. We have the public office, Jefferson Healthcare, et cetera, but we do expect, if given this adequate supply, we do expect a pretty significant demand for this Omicron-specific booster. So we are starting to do some planning about potentially bringing back our roadshow, so to speak, to ensure that we are able to distribute that vaccine to the community as quickly and as equitably as possible. So nothing is solidified yet. We're still not 100% sure what the supply and the timing of that supply will look like, but we're getting ready to bring back mass vaccination clinics if needed. So we'll be closely working with public health. We've had a little bit of a lull. The chance to kind of rest and reset has been nice, especially for our volunteer corps, but we're ready to pull the trigger on that again, if and when needed. So we'll be working with them to keep an eye on the timing, the supply, and the capabilities of some of our partners to see if that's going to be a need. Other than that, moment everyone's been waiting for, the all-county picnic, overall a success. It looked a lot different than it had looked in years past, pared down significantly. Just a handful of key partners and vendors were there to engage with folks. We did distribute 500 bags of, as you mentioned, corn and zucchini, and actually a pretty good example of what the all-county picnic out and kind of the message that we're preaching. Due to some less than ideal weather for corn earlier this year, Our vendors weren't able to meet our order in time for the picnic. So we had far less corn than we had folks signed up to receive it. We pivoted a little bit, showed some resiliency in the face of some adversity. And instead of corn, we gave away some of our go bags with corn and zucchini. So folks still had some items to grill up at their picnics the next day. So we thank all of our neighborhood organizers who came and got corn and then held a picnic next day. Thank them for their flexibility. Thanks to our vendors for their flexibility as well. And a small example, but a good one of again, flexibility in the face of a little bit of adversity. A good example of some of the supply chain issues folks have been experiencing recently, as well as just issues with the weather, all on top of it. Picnic looked much different than in years past. We had some excellent presentations from KPTZ and KROH, from Elizabeth, one of our neighborhood leaders down in Quilcene. I gave a presentation, as did Sheriff Joe Knoll. So huge shout out to everyone who was able to show up and either attended a presentation or picked up corn and held a picnic the following day. We had a little over 20 neighborhoods hold picnics where they got to know one another, built some resiliency at that neighborhood level. So I'm very excited for how it turned out, and just a little under 365 days till our next county picnic.
Thanks, Willie. Any emerging questions? Allison, do you have one?
Oh, I just wanted to update. I heard from Bonnie that apparently the new flow sheet is already live on our website. So it's there. They work quickly at the Department of Public Health.
Awesome. Thank you.
Willie, I'm just bummed I missed a chance to offload a bunch of zucchini from my garden. If had I known, I would have come prepared.
That's some of the feedback we got from a number of folks, was that they were excited about the corn since they hadn't had that yet this season, but they had plenty of zucchini from their own garden. So wasn't an ideal choice, but that's kind of the definition of resiliency. You know, you're not going to always get what you want, but we make do with it the best way we can.
Get what you need, right?
Exactly.
Yep. Thanks, you guys. Well, we are done early today. That leaves KP. Oh, Kate.
This may be worth repeating that we are not meeting next Monday, and instead I will be here on Tuesday the 6th because of the Labor Day weekend.
And I should say, we can talk some more offline about this, but I won't actually be able to be here Tuesday the 6th because I'm in clinic that day. So I'll be flying solo after Labor Day weekend.
We'll make plans accordingly.